This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
To DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes, or this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
We're recording just after the close today, March 24th. We are live on the Twitter Spaces again today, so it seems like this seems to be the new way of doing the recording, and then people that can catch up later on the podcast also are able to do that. So I think this is the here we are living in the future, Sam.
Yeah, trying to reluctantly embrace technology.
Well, I mean, at least it's working well. And our Twitter guy, Jason's out today, so I actually had to do it myself. And hopefully it's working.
Yeah, no, I had full confidence in you and your technological abilities here. That makes one of us, I guess. Yeah.
All right, why don't we get into where are we? It was kind of a busy week.
Yeah, so taking a look at markets right now, where we are is the S&P 500 is going to finish the week in positive territory. It was up 1.4% on a week-to-date basis. As we're getting closer to month-end here and quarter-end, I can just kind of give a sneak peek here, but right now it looks like it's just trying to hang on to a positive month-to-date return at positive 20 basis points on the quarter-to-date basis and year-to-date basis. It's up about 3.9%. This week's leader was Communication Services, up over 3%, followed somewhat closely, I guess you can say, by the energy sector and materials, both up about 2.2% on a week-to-date basis. There were two sectors that were not only laggards, but they finished the week negative, and that was the utilities and real estate sector. Down 1.2% and 1.3% respectively between those two. Moving over to fixed income land, seems like a kind of a quiet week, but you know, just looking across parts of the curve, there are perhaps some troubling signals that we can glean from what we're seeing across the curve here. But let's just start out at the two-year Treasury note. It closed the week with a yield of 3.77%. The yield was in 7 basis points on the week. Moving out to the 10-year, it closed at 3.37, and the bond at 3.64, actually up 2 basis points in yield there. But you know, when you look at this entire curve from the 2-year on out, it's there. All the yields there are inverted to the 1-month bill out to the one-year bill, the 12-month bill there. So It's kind of unusual to see that inversion, and everything there, you know, across the curve from that 1-month T-bill out to the 30-year bond, the yields there are all inverted to both the effective funds rate as well as the Fed funds upper bound on their target rate there. So, it definitely seems that the market's signaling to the Fed that they should not continue on this hiking path. And I'm not sure Powell gets the joke, but basically, I mean, the market's telling that the FOMC, it's time to end this hiking cycle. So I guess we have a little bit over a month now before we see who wins by the May meeting. We'll see if which one budges.
Well, I was looking at the rates today, and I couldn't believe it was only 7 basis point move in the 2-year and 6 basis points in the 10-year. Certainly felt like a lot more. It seems like,
yeah. Yeah, we were talking at the desk yesterday, March 8th that we saw the high point in the 2-year yield in this cycle so far. It got up to, on an intraday basis, it got up to 5.08%. So that's 130 basis point kind of rally in the yield on the 2-year in just over 2 weeks here. So, you know, it seems kind of quiet on this week, but, going back to the start of this month here, we really have seen quite a big move. In fact, on a month-to-date basis, I'm looking at my screen here, the 2-year note is, the yield is in by 1.05%. So definitely March is a little bit of madness going on here so far. But what all this meant to the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate is that it was positive as well, up about 0.2% on a week-to-date basis. On a year-to-date basis, it's up 3.8%. Pretty much all the sectors that we look at within the fixed income sector, within the fixed income universe here that we cover on Monday Morning Minutes finished in the green. Leading the way was emerging market sovereign debt, up 1.4%, followed very closely by IG corporate credit here in the U.S. I'll give it a 1.4% as well with a little bit of a round up there. Bank loans were the laggard here, up 0.25% for the week to date. But again, everything green across the board, including high yield corporates, treasuries, and agency mortgage-backed securities. Moving over to commodities, the Bloomberg commodity broad basket of commodities, that index was up 50 basis points on the week to date. It's still down about 8% on the year to date basis. Looking at a couple of these key commodities that people like to look at, WTI crude oil front month futures couldn't manage to hold the $70 handle. I saw it broke above a couple times this week on an intraday basis, but here we are on the close on Friday, March 24th, and it has a price of $69.20 per barrel of WTI crude oil. That's up almost 4% on the week, but the front month futures contract is down about 14% still on a year-to-date basis.
Yeah, Sam, we had been talking in the past about the Biden administration refilling the SPR at these levels. I believe they said they wanted to fill it in that 67 to 72 type range, as you said, we failed to break above 70 here. But then there was Department of Energy came out and said that they're going to have
Jeff, but I think you're about to say that the Secretary of Energy for the Biden administration came out and talked, and I think I hear you coming back on here. So
yeah, so the that they said that they were going to have a tough time refilling the SPR this year. So here we are, and not even at the end of the first quarter already, and they're already talking about how they're going to have a hard time refilling it this year due to maintenance and the kind of the and actually they're as we talked about probably about a month ago, they are selling some more oil this second quarter, and so I guess in the second half of the year, due to maintenance at two of the four sites of the SPR, they're not going to be able to buy back oil this year. So much for Biden being the best oil trader of all time, selling at $94 a barrel and buying at 70. Who knows at what price they're going to get next year.
Yeah, I guess they got a little excited with their paper model portfolios, right? They could get good execution, but if they have nowhere to store it, then I guess that's a little bit of a conundrum. So pretty poor trading there, I suppose you can say, from the Biden administration. So looking at that, it's just right within that range that you talked about between the 67 to 72 bucks a barrel there. It's a split in the difference. We'll see if they get it done, but it doesn't seem like it, for sure, unless something changes here. Going over to gold, tipped above the 2000 mark, similar to oil a couple times this week, didn't manage to hold it. It is still up 30 basis points on the week-to-date basis at, $1,979.40 a troy ounce of gold for the front month futures contract there. So gold had a very strong month so far. I don't want to jinx it, but on a month-to-date basis with 1 week left in the month and the quarter, the front month contract of gold is up almost 8% on the month-to-date basis and just over 8% on the year-to-date basis here. So again, attributing to some of this March madness that we've been talking about there. On the flip side, I will note that it was the other way around, bro, with WTI crude oil. That was down 10% on this month-to-date basis. So we'll see how much can change between now and the end of this month. And then to wrap it all up, looking here at Bitcoin. Bitcoin is just shy of $28,000 a Bitcoin. Week-to-date basis up 4%, month-to-date up over 20%, and a whopping 69% positive performance on the year-to-date basis there. So that's the where we are, part of the segment of Monday Morning Moons. Jeff, do you want to kick us off? What happened in macro land?
Yes. Sorry. Yeah, certainly, Sam. On macro land, we didn't get to, even though the week felt long, we didn't get a good start or didn't get a start to the week until really on Wednesday when we get the Fed rate decision. And as is typical around the Fed meetings, we'll talk about the Fed rate hike of 25 basis points here, and we'll go into much more details there in our topic of the week. On Thursday, we did get the jobless claims numbers. They came in steady as she drifts. Nothing to see here. Labor market still strong. And then this morning, we did get some durable goods orders. That came in at these are February preliminary numbers. So here we are at end of March, and we're still getting the preliminary February numbers. Came in at a -1%. It was expected to be a positive 0.2, so a pretty weak report there. All the prior months were also revised down, for the last 5 months, orders have come in below shipments. That'll be interesting to see kind of how those numbers, how that works itself out over the next few months there. And then we also got the S&P Global manufacturing PMIs and services PMI numbers this morning. This is more like it. These are March preliminary numbers, so here we are. At the 1 week left in the month, and we're already getting full month numbers. But the manufacturing PMI number came in at 49.3. So it was expected to be 47 again, came in at 49.3. So getting close to that 50 level for expansion. And then the services PMI number came in very strong. It was expected to be 50.3, came in at 53.8. So again, the services numbers continue to be strong across the board. We'll see where the isms come through. I think they're coming out next week. We want to front run ourselves. Nope, not next week. It must be the week after, when in the first week in April. But really, when we get this, it seems like the manufacturing may be starting to pick up a little bit. And Eric Dahl and I did talk about the PMIs and diffusion indices on an episode a little bit while back there. Well, Sam, while you were out. And so one thing to remember is that doesn't talk, even though you're getting a number close to 50, it's not really a... it doesn't really talk about how deep the number, the recession, or the number can be, and how deep the manufacturing side is. So that was episode 105 on March 3rd is what we talked about there. So really a pretty light week in terms of the macro front, except for the Fed. And one thing I also want to talk about is that when we're looking at the interest rate probabilities, usually, we always like to talk about that, Sam. And, usually it's on the back of what do we think the next meeting is going to be. But because we just had a meeting, we're looking at a 22% chance of a Fed 25 basis point rate hike here on the May 3rd meeting. So we'll obviously keep everyone updated on that. It looks like the markets are predicting, though, that there'll be rate cuts towards the end of the year. And actually back down, they raised it 25 basis points to a 5% rate, and the market's pricing in back down to 4% in Fed funds by the end of the year. Also, on Thursdays tend to be an interesting day now because the Fed releases their balance sheet numbers, and until these numbers kind of go back down, we'll continue to highlight them. Those numbers came out yesterday after the close. The Fed's balance sheet rose, quote, only $36 billion. The discount window borrowing fell by $42 billion to $110 billion. And just as the discount window fell $42 billion, the new bank term funding program, the BTFP, rose $42 billion. So it seems like people just shifted that money from the discount window to this new bank term funding program. So that number went from $12 billion last week, as it had just kind of started and getting ramped up, to $54 billion as of Thursday. And the number for the borrowing for banks seized by the FDIC was up from $142 billion to $180 billion. And that's those are the same two banks that just the borrowing by the FDIC has increased. And Fed and Chair Powell did talk about it slightly in his press conference and just said that data is guaranteed by the FDIC, so they're really not worried about it. So with that, let's move on to the topic of the week. As I said, the Fed raised rates by 25 basis points to a range of 4.75 to 5%. It was interesting that Chair Powell came out and the statement started off with, he started off, normally when there's high inflation, he talks about, I'm going to speak directly to the American people and talk about how inflation is a burden and they're going to do everything they can to bring inflation under control. given the movement in, or given the kind of everything that's been going on in the banking sector, he started with that instead of talking directly to the people. One of the quotes he in that statement, he said, you know, the actions by the Treasury and the FDIC and the Fed demonstrate that all depositors' savings and the banking system are safe. That, you know, they did say inflation remains too high and labor market continues to be very tight. They expect subdued growth to continue overall at the Fed, the participants do. Job vacancies are still high. Labor demand substantially exceeds the supply of available workers. And that even though inflation has moderated somewhat since the middle of last year, the strength of the recent inflation readings indicate that inflationary pressures continue to run very high. They continued the quantitative tightening of reducing their balance sheet. Oh, no, I guess I didn't say reducing their balance sheet. He said reducing their securities holdings. So as we said, the balance sheet rose. So we got to be particular about that side of things being the securities holdings. They're going to reduce those. And that events in the banking system are likely to result in tighter credit conditions for households and businesses. So that's going to be kind of a theme here from the Q&A portion of the press conference. And they also, they kind of ended the statement with, we no longer state that we anticipate that ongoing rate increases will be appropriate to quell inflation. Instead, we now anticipate that some additional policy firming may be appropriate. That was kind of the end of the statement. And so really it just kind of shows how we are, as we like to say, Sam, we're closer to the end than to the beginning. And certainly from this rate hike cycle. Do you want to talk about the dots or the SEP, and then I'll go through the Q&A?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Before I get into the SEP, or Summary of Economic Projections, while you were talking about the possibility of a future rate cut, it made me think of a yield inversion metric that Powell had said he prefers. And he pointed out when he was talking, he was saying rather than using the differential between the 10-year yield to the three-month bill or even to the two-year the difference in the yields there. He had this little bit of a wonkier type of way of looking at yield curves, and he chose to use the expected 3-month yield, 18 months forward, relative to the current 3-month yield there. So, and looking for inversions there because he thought that provided more signal. So while you were talking, I pulled this up, looking at it over time, just seeing what it said. And I saw it here that it had inverted as of, I want to say, late October or early November of last year, 2022. And the reason why I bring this up, and as you're talking about whether or not the Fed's going to, and the market's trying to determine whether or not the Fed's going to pause or even cut in 2023, what this inversion typically had done, and this only goes back to 1996 as far as the data goes on that portion of the curve, but every time that inversion occurred, that marked just about the end of the Fed's hiking cycle, where they reached their terminal rate and they did hold it for a period of time. This goes back to three hiking cycles that accompanied that shortly preceded three recessions. So again, I bring this up now because we reached an inversion in this yield curve back in, again, late October, early November of 2022. But since that time, the Fed continued to hike rates to the tune of about 100 basis points subsequent to that inversion. So a little bit differing policy than they had from the last three hiking cycles, but I suppose you could talk about this one being the difference being the battle for inflation. So now you add into some cracks into financial stability here, and we'll see if that changes their mind. But with that, jumping into the review of the summary of economic projections here for the quarterly update. Really quick, just looking at, it looks like they downgraded the change in real GDP for the calendar year of 2023 as well as 2024. It now stands at 0.4% for 2023, down from 0.5% in the last projection last December. Similarly for 2024, it was downgraded to 1.2% year over year on real GDP or annualized GDP relative to 1.6 in December. Unemployment rate largely stayed the same. There's a slight downtick actually in the unemployment rate projection for 2023, down to 4.5 from 4.6. That's a little bit curious, but I guess that's just a nod to the what they've seen as strength in the labor market and perhaps being undeterred by the potential tightening of financial conditions from the what happened with the what's happening with the regional banks here. PCE inflation, they upgraded it for 2023 and kept it the same for 2024. 2023, they bumped it up from 3.1, which was a projection in December, up to 3.3 as of this most recent SEP. And then on a core PCE basis, they moved that up to 3.6 from 3.5 in December. And I'm just scrolling down here because I know you put in the current PCE. So the current PCE right now, just as a point of comparison, is 5.4 on the headline, on the deflator, 5.4. So they're estimated to go down to 3.3, or in terms of the median projection there. And then relative to core PCE, it's currently at 4.7. So, you know, they expect that to cut down to 3.6. So we'll see whether or not that occurs. And then getting over to the dot plots here, they kept the I guess you can call it the terminal rate here for 2023 at 5.1, unched from December. They did upgrade, or they did move up the projection for 2024 to 4.3 relative to 4.1. So it seems like a little bit higher for a little bit longer based on that change there. But you and I were talking beforehand when we're looking at this this table here, that it was quite interesting. When you take a look at the range of responses for the rate in 2023, again, recall that the median was 5.1, the range of outcomes there, or the range of Fed funds target rate there was from 4.9 to 5.9. So pretty close to the lower end is the median there. In fact, when you take a look at this measure that they refer to as the central tendency, which where they strike from all the respondents the three highest and the three lowest, that range sat right on the median at the lower bound at 5.1, with a high of 5.6. But something else that just struck both of us is just, I mean, we're trying to figure out who this 5.9 is, you know, out there saying that's what their expectations is for 2023. We took a guess. We thought it was Bullard, but I guess Bullard just came out it looks like today came out saying that he's now at 5.625. So there's someone out there out hawking the hawk there with Bullard at 5.9. So we'll see. It'd be interesting to see who that would be, but I have a suspicion that we probably won't hear about that.
Yeah, or Bullard's going to have to he sees that 5.9, he's going to change his tune.
Yeah, and, he thought he did from the last meeting, and then he didn't do it enough, right? So, but that's the wrap up of the summary of economic projections, the ones that come out once a quarter. Jeff, I know you kind of combed through some of the and chose some highlights that you had from the Q&A as well. So do you want to fill in our listeners on what you found interesting there?
Yeah, I think generally we were expecting maybe a little bit more of a stressed Jay Powell. I think we did talk about how he was very relaxed last Fed meeting or the last press conference, and given kind of the bank situation, that maybe he would be a little bit more stressed. But you know, he did have a couple jokes that he did come through with. So maybe he was feeling a little bit more relaxed than people were expecting, or at least than I was expecting. First off, we talk about inflation. He did say that the data on inflation and the labor market came in stronger than they had expected. And before the he called them recent events, they were clearly on track to continue with ongoing rate hikes. One of the jokes is one of the reporters asked him. He said that you mentioned disinflation 9 or 10 times, and is disinflation still occurring today? And Chair Powell said, well, what actually happened was that he got the question 12 times, and so that's why he said disinflation 12 times. But he said absolutely the same story is still intact. So still in deflation mode, disinflation mode, I should say, not deflation, but disinflation. And you know, he went into his typical, let's go about this breakout inflation into through the three buckets. The good core goods. Core services and then non-housing services, and he did say that there's still there's a little bit of a sign of progress in the non-housing services sector, but really it's going to have to come through softening demand and perhaps some softening in labor market conditions, and they don't see that yet. And that's 56% of the core PCE. that we do get next week. And so, you know, I think similar, they're in the similar place that they were from an inflation perspective from the last meeting. So really no changes there. If we talk about the balance sheet, he did say that the recent liquidity provisions have increased the size of their balance sheet, but the intent and effects of it are very different from when they expand their balance sheet through purchases of long-term securities, which, you know, we refer to as quantitative easing. The large-scale purchases of long-term securities are really meant to alter the stance of policy by pushing down and yields, pushing up the price and down on rates, longer-term rates, which support demand through channels that he claims that they understand fairly well. And then this current balance sheet expansion, he would not term it as quantitative easing because it's really just temporary lending to banks to meet the special liquidity needs created by the recent tensions. It's not intended to directly alter the stance of monetary policy. So he came down pretty, Powell came down pretty firmly there on his, whether he thought that was QE or not, but I think it's certainly, you know, balance sheet expansion can easily turn into some quantitative easing.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see how clear he can be when he chooses to be, right? When he wants to make sure that, you know, people don't think that he's bailing out banks, or if he's engaging in quantitative easing again, he's just crystal clear in his language. Yet he likes to be murky and just leave people guessing with uncertainty around some, you know, the vagaries of the terms that he decides to use.
But that's right.
As you were talking, I also thought that it's always nice to hear that Jay Powell's in a good mood, and he's got jokes when the state of regional banks are at risk here and the larger economy is kind of in his hands. So it's always nice to see the people in charge of these things to be so lighthearted.
Well, if he was worried, then everyone would be much more worried about the state of regional banks. So because he was relaxed, I guess he wants to give that impression that people can be relaxed.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Although I would like to see him a little bit serious about the situation as well. But somewhere in between, I guess.
That would make sense. Jay Powell also said that he thinks that their program of allowing the balance sheet to run off predictably and passively is working, and that they haven't talked about changing the balance sheet implementation. They haven't discussed that yet. So that's about it for the balance sheet. If we kind of move over towards the kind of bank failures, there was a lot of, I don't want to say finger pointing, but a lot of the questions that were asked of Chair Powell, he basically said the investigation or the review is undergoing, and I think Vice Chair Barr is heading it as he's like the vice chair for supervision, so that would make sense. And so he kind of pushed off on answering any questions about that. But he did say that, you know, I thought it was interesting, and this is something we kind of highlighted in our chat that we have going on internally, is that he did say that they demonstrate that all depositors' savings are safe and that the banking system is safe. Which we were like, wow, can he really say that all depositor savings are safe? And really, obviously that's a FDIC, Treasury, Congress type, the Congress that has to kind of act on that. So I don't think it's a Fed move to really say that, and we'll get to that. There's another question that I will highlight, where he said, where did it go here? He said that, it was a question that said, you stated twice today that all depositor savings in the bank system are safe. Are you saying that de facto deposit insurance covers all savings? Shouldn't Congress have a say in that? And just by way of example, if a bank has less than $1 billion in assets failed, are you promising to bail out all of its depositors? And Chair Powell said, well, I'm not saying anything more than I'm saying, but what I'm saying is you've seen that we have the tools to protect depositors when there's a threat of serious harm to the economy or to the financial system. We're prepared to use those tools, and I think depositors should assume that their deposits are safe. So he's not saying that they are safe; just the people should assume that they're safe. So it's a kind of a, and we didn't talk about it, but Treasury Secretary Yellen was talking, but I think it was in front of Congress at the same time Powell's press conference was going off. And she's been kind of flip flopping every single day. So one day it's like all deposits are going to be safe, and then next day, we have the tool, similar to Jay Powell, we have the tools, but no one should assume that the deposits are safe. The next day she kind of backtracks and changes things again. So I think they're stuck in this weird position where obviously if everyone doesn't assume that their deposits are safe, people are going to remove their deposits. And that's just going to cause more bank runs, and then that's going to cause them to have banks to have more problems. So really, they're really trying to kind of toe the line here between don't worry about your deposits, but we can't really say that they're, you know, insured. So, you know, I think both Chair Powell and Secretary Yellen are kind of struggling with that line towing. But if we go back to Chair Powell, he did say that he thinks that their monetary policy tool works. This is kind of funny. He goes, we think our monetary policy tool works, and we think many, many banks, our rate hikes were well telegraphed to the market, and many banks have managed to handle them. So kind of a dig there at Silicon Valley Bank. Then he got into it again. There was another direct question about Silicon Valley Bank, and he said, Silicon Valley Bank management failed badly. They grew the bank very quickly. They exposed the bank to significant liquidity risk and interest rate risk, didn't hedge that risk. We know that SVB experienced an unprecedentedly, is that really a word, but that's what the transcript said, rapid and massive bank run. So this is a very large group of connected depositors, concentrated group of connected depositors in a very, very fast run, faster than historical record would suggest. And he also said that this was a bank that was an outlier in terms of both its percentage of uninsured deposits and in terms of its holdings of duration risk. So it basically pushed all the blame onto the Silicon Valley Bank management. If we kind of shift over to kind of more forward-looking events here, or how the Fed's looking at things going forward, Chair Powell did say the events of the last 2 weeks are likely to result in some tightening credit conditions for households and businesses, and that should weigh on demand, on the labor market, and on inflation. He did say that he thinks it's you could think of it, of this credit tightening as equivalent of a rate hike, or he said, or perhaps more than that. So whether it's, you know, 25 basis points, 50 basis points, I've seen anywhere upwards of 100 basis points as an estimate of the credit tightening and its effect on the economy. And he also said that, you know, the traditional financial conditions indices are really not adjust. They're focused a lot on interest rates and equities, and they don't necessarily capture lending conditions. And that so he thinks that the credit those are not going to be good proxies for this current tightening in financial conditions. And then finally, I think there was one question that was, you know, this is kind of what we were debating before the Fed meeting. The Fed hikes. Is that going to make the problem with the banks worse? Does that mean the Fed shouldn't hike? That was a lot of the case for why people were saying the Fed shouldn't hike or even cut because of the banks. And, you know, as we expected, Sam, Chair Powell said, he said, monetary policy, we're focused on macroeconomic outcomes. We're focused on potential credit tightening and what can that produce in the way of tighter credit conditions. And then when they think about the situation with the banks, they're focused on their other tools, their financial stability tools, their lending facilities, the discount window, and also he called it the new facility. So he couldn't even remember what the BTFP stands for. So I thought that was pretty funny, but it was really just a, we were predicting they're going to raise rates, and they rose, they hiked rates to fight inflation, and they're going to kind of separate out the bank problem into, hey, we have this bank problem, we're going to use our other tools for that, and not really use the Fed funds target rate to fight these other problems.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way that you lay this all out too, you're starting to see more comparisons of Powell to other past chair people as well. So earlier on, people just like to compare him to Volcker because of his desire to fight inflation. Now they're also drawing the comparison to him with Ben Bernanke as well, in terms of Ben's ability, his kind of maneuvering out of the financial crisis that was also probably created by members of the FOMC and their monetary policy. But so now he's got two people to kind of look to in terms of drawing comparisons to. You've got the Bernanke crisis fighting person, and then you've got the Volcker inflation fighter. So we'll see if he puts on both hats there.
I thought it was pretty funny too. He did, and maybe this is why the Fed kind of reacts so slowly to these things, is that he said, you know, they take fiscal policy as it comes to their front door. They stick it in their model along with, quote, a million other things. And, and so that's how they run their model, with a million plus one inputs. And so, you know, it takes a long time. They got to use the supercomputer to really get the, to really get crank out those outputs on what the what the economy is doing if they have a million inputs.
Yeah, it sounds like you're trying to model it to perfection, which means it's not going to be very robust, I suppose.
Yeah, imagine accidentally hitting the F9 key and it refreshing, and you're like, oh man, I got to wait another 10 minutes now.
Yeah, if they're lucky.
Yeah, but, right.
Yeah, no, that's a good summary, though. Thanks for combing through that the transcripts as usual. In terms of things to keep an eye on for the upcoming week, we've got some pretty good data points coming out. We have the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20 city price index, home price index there. On a year-over-year basis, it looks like it's going to decelerate a little bit, but still appreciate. It's going to be a positive 2.4% on a year-over-year basis, down from 4.7% the period prior. So that would be for the month of January is the 2.4. So talking about lag data, you know, here we are in coming to the end of March here, and we're just going to get the January data for the old Case-Shiller year-over-year numbers. And when we move forward to, I just pulled up the central bank economic calendar here as well, and it looks like the aforementioned bar is been called in front of the, you know, following in Yellen's footsteps of this week. He got called in front of the Senate Banking Committee on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday he'll be in front of the House there as well. So it'll be interesting to see what the line of questions will be, and more importantly his answers, but more to come on that. And then on Friday we have both the income and spending data. Personal income and spending are both estimated to slow slightly to on a month over month basis, both of them at a positive 0.3%. And then on Friday, we also get the PCE data, the inflation basket that the Fed prefers. On a month over month basis, PCE, the headline deflator, is estimated or expected to come in at a positive 0.3%, slowing down from 0.6% the month prior. On a year-over-year basis, what that translates to is it's estimated to go down to 5.1% year-over-year, down from 5.4. On the core deflator, it's estimated to be at 4.7%, which is flat on a year-over-year basis to the previous period. So this is for February data that will be incoming on Friday.
So we're a long way to go before we get to, you know, the two that the Fed's looking for. And I guess that, you know, they're projecting a, what did you say, 3.6, I believe, for the end of the year. So a long way to go to even get to that kind of level where they start to feel comfortable that, you know, maybe the inflation is under control.
Yep. So I guess a whole host of inputs, you know, to add on to that million and one inputs that they put into their model. I mean, on top of what we talked about with what the Treasury market at least is telling us relative to the yields across the curve relative to the Fed funds target rate, inversions all along the way. What you talked about in the interest rate probabilities via the Fed funds futures, and then of course this financial stability aspect as well. So perhaps we'll get a little bit more information next Tuesday or Wednesday, when Barr appears in front of Congress.
Yeah, we'll have to read the highlights of that, as just like when Jay's in front of Congress, it's too hard to watch.
Yeah, the questions that come out of the reporters at the FOMC pressers are far better, sound far more intelligent than the ones that come out of our elected officials at the in Congress there. So,
yeah, and they get straight into the point.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I guess that wraps it up for this week, Sam. I'd like to thank everyone on the Twitter Spaces for tuning in and everyone listening on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for everyone for listening to us today. And this is Monday Morning Minutes. Please don't forget to subscribe. You can probably do so on this Twitter app, although I don't know how to do it. But you can also do it on your favorite podcast platform. And if we're not available on your favorite podcast platform, be sure to let us know. We got a little bit of nice hate on our sound, or I won't drag you into this mix, Jeff, but on my mic quality, sound quality last week. So I got this brand new microphone. So hopefully it came out a little bit better. But if you have any comments, suggestions for a topic a week that you want Jeff and I to hit up, you can go ahead and send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com, or you can hit us up on the Twitter at DLineMinutes.
And don't forget our website, doubleline.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital. We got a new video with our CMBS portfolio manager, Morris Chen, talking about the current goings on in the commercial real estate space. And so it's about an 18-minute video, I think. So it's worth your time, but a little bit long. And also, don't forget to catch Jeff Sherman's appearance on Bloomberg TV from last week. And make sure to follow Sam and Jeff Sherman on Twitter there, at Sherman Show Pod. Those of you on the spaces, that's the one with the little microphone logo there. And hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.
Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.